Everybody, welcome to Monday Sports Line, the Bulldog Hour. Kevin Horney alongside, as always, take it at three. Hand it off to our good friend Phil Bonatti, his fine show behind the bench. We'll take you to 4:45 today, and then, weather permitting, it's the Lakers and the Bulls from Chicago. The Lakers are already there, and I know it's been very, very difficult across the country to get games in, but I think they'll be okay with this one tonight. I haven't heard any change there. Already been makeup games this morning that should have been played over the weekend in the NBA. So it's a flipped on its head schedule, but I think we're okay for the Lakers, who are on the road for a while because of the other use, mainly the Grammys, for their building, for the old crypt. That's what happens. They go on the long road trip, and this is a long one for them. I think it's 8 games, the longest of the year, and so we will see how it plays out tonight. Tell you about the schedule for both 790 and 1430 a little bit later on, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his outstanding business, Precision Civil Engineering, Planning, Land Surveying, Civil Engineering, Landscape Architecture, Construction Management, all there under one roof. 449-4500 or Precision ENG or Precision Eng if you prefer, .net for more information. And when we go over the schedules, I'll tell you about the great fundraising Ed does for his alma mater, Fresno State, in particular, the Lyles College of Engineering there on campus. Now, the other two reminders where Paul comes up to talk basketball, we'll talk some baseball as well, and also discuss a little bit of football since our Mount Rushmore is still waiting for an opportunity for the first championship because Devontae, unfortunately, out of the mix after what happened yesterday in Seattle. We'll get to all of that with Paul in just a couple minutes. First, other lead dogs, want to spend some time with you. Starting with Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing, 825-5337 or leesair.com on the web. Incidentally, 825-5337 is 825-Lees, and they also sponsor the Lee's Air Hotline, where Paul will come up on in just a couple minutes, and Phil has his guests and callers from the general public on, and that is 559-320-1430. As far as forecast goes, fog advisory this morning figures to be another one till 11 a.m. tomorrow. High of 60 today, a low of 38, then 62 tomorrow with the ever-present fog, hopefully turning as it has today in the sunshine in the afternoon, at least partially sunny in the afternoon. A cloudy Wednesday in 60, and then we go with partly cloudy skies for 4 days at 61, 62, 66, 66 through Sunday. So the temps are pretty good as far as the high might be, and the lows after the 38 tonight will be in the 40s, low to mid-40s. That is a recipe for fog, of course. And one more time, it's nice, particularly with the rest of the country really being locked down with the extreme and bitter cold. Nice to live out here, but the one thing we need is more rain. I know we've had a lot of rain seasonally so far, about double what we normally have. But still, we don't want to have a long spring and summer with drought restrictions. So hopefully we are going to get rain, particularly February into March, and then it can back off for the crops and everything. But right now, it is a good enough forecast if you can get around the fog, and we'll wait and see if we get any rain at all after this 7 day. Anyway, thanks everybody at Lee's for allowing us the time. Again, 825-5337, 825-Lee's, or information, leesair.com, Central Air Plumbing, Heating, or Roofing. Terrific local people, been in the Central Valley in NorCal since 1981. You see the avocado green and blue trucks all over the place. Been longtime sponsors at the station. We appreciate everything they do for us. Then finally, our great friends at KFC, the local operators in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman, want to remind you about their great deals. We talk all the time about the terrific Zinger chicken sandwich that's now part of their menu. We mention on Tuesdays you've got the $10 eight-piece or eight tenders bucket, but also we have brought up throughout this month of January the tremendous $5 bowls they have, classic or spicy. We're talking about creamy mashed potatoes, sweet corn, melty cheese, crispy nuggets, all stacked in one bowl for just $5. Or you can go with the classic if you would prefer and bring the heat with bold, spicy flavors. That is how it works at KFC with the classic or the spicy, either way. So you're going classic or you're grabbing the spicy part of it. But either way, you've got the mashed potatoes, the sweet corn, the melty cheese, the crispy nuggets. So again, a great chance to stop by those local KFCs in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. Also, you can grab the $5 Maddie's Cheesy Nuggy Gravy Bowl. That's terrific as well. Crispy nuggets, rich gravy, plenty of cheese. No shortcuts there at KFC. Big flavor, big comfort, just $5. So the $5 bowls are there, and we are just a couple of weeks, a little less than a couple of weeks now, away from the big bowl in Santa Clara. Unfortunately, not involving the teams we would prefer, but if you are a Seahawk or Patriot fan, or if you're Marshawn Lynch, so you can be asked the question now a million times, why did Pete Carroll not hand you the football 11 years ago? In Arizona, you're looking forward to the Super Bowl, and we are as well. And, of course, we'll have it on our air from Santa Clara in a couple of Sundays. Anyway, thanks to the local KFCs for everything they do for us. And, again, this is a limited time with the $5 bowls, classic or spicy, so make sure you pick it up right now. Anyway, thanks, everybody, to the local KFCs, Fresno, Clovis, Selman, Kerman. Thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. And thanks, as always, to Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering. Tell you about the rest of the schedule, everything a little bit later on. Right now, we turn to our longtime friend, longtime voice of your Bulldogs, and someone who had basketball and also an opportunity with the baseball team over the weekend, which means we'll start with football. Let's bring Paul up right now. Paul, how you doing?
Tony, doing great, man. A beautiful day. The sunshine is out there. I can't complain.
No, it's really nice, particularly with the rest of the country is going through right now, which is just absolutely brutal. I think we've had like 11,000 canceled flights across the country, and so we're lucky we're out here. And I know California has had its issues, particularly on the coast, but we are largely unaffected by natural disaster here, unless you want to count fog as a natural disaster. So it's always nice when we can enjoy weather. And I've said this at this time of year, that when we get into February, it seems like spring gets here anyway. Which, you know what, I'll tell you, let's start with baseball first, then we'll get to basketball. And I also want to get to Stephen's email about the old Mount Rushmore of our choosing, and also his view of the local Mount Rushmore related to the Super Bowl. We'll get to that in a second. I also want to mention to Robert in town. Robert, thanks for your email, your analysis about both the New Mexico and Grand Canyon games on the money, and I will try to address that with Paul in just a second. But first, Paul, I want to ask you about baseball. How did things go with the double play dinner? And were the alums creaking at all? Did they need oil more than anything else to play the games? I'm just curious.
You know, I didn't get to go to the alumni game because I had basketball and a 100-year-old birthday party. So I missed the alumni game, but I was just out of baseball today getting some reports. And the players were as impressed as ever with Terrence Frazier's antics. They loved all the trash talk, and it was just a little cold. They would have had the weather we have today. I think everybody probably would have had a little more fun. But the double play dinner was fantastic. Last year's team, you know, got the championship ring. Coach Oberlin got emotional talking about so many of those seniors, you know, like Bobby Blanford, like all the guys who signed, Murph Gray, Jack Anker, Eddie Saldivar. I think maybe he got the most emotional about Cooper Bergman, you know, a seven-year senior. I think between Bergman and Bryce Armstrong and what those two guys did dealing with injuries to help propel the Bulldogs to the Mountain West Tournament title. It was great to relive all that, and see so many alums back, and just a reminder that it's a really special program. And the tradition that program has is something, you know, very few programs, if any, can boast about. So when you have something like that, you need to find ways to celebrate it, and looking forward to doing that throughout the season with a great schedule this year for the Diamond Dogs.
And speaking of that, we are less than 3 weeks away from the home opener, Paul. It has gotten here in a big, big hurry. And, you know, I had mentioned the other day, and I'd like to get your comment about this, that I realize that everything revolves around football by and large. You and I have had the discussion, however, many, many times before, that in order to have a vibrant athletic department, you need interest 9 months a year. That's all there is to it. And so it is very important that basketball and baseball are doing well. And I know that when they look to expand the Mountain West, we've already seen Dallas Baptist ready to come in and all of that, and Gonzaga for basketball. I know that they're always looking football. But I mentioned the other day, Paul, I'd like to get your comment, that it's too bad at least from my point of view right now, that Grand Canyon jumped to the Mountain West, because I think they would have been a nice associate member in the pack. How do you feel about that?
No, I think from an athletic standpoint, they're as competitive as anyone. I mean, you look at the talent that was on the floor in purple for the Lopes on Saturday, and that stacks up with any team in the Mountain West. I mean, there's a lot of talent in the league. UNLV's got a real talented roster. Certainly San Diego State probably takes the cake, but Grand Canyon, from an athleticism, size, and ability standpoint, is right there. And I thought the Bulldogs did really well to make that game as close as it was, because there were some matchups. I mean, you could, I think, objectively look at the five positions on the floor and say there wasn't one that favored Fresno State, but they played well enough as a team to give themselves the chance to beat a really talented tournament caliber squad. It's probably going to be a lot harder when they go to Phoenix, but no, I agree. That's an athletic program that's done a lot. There's still, I mean, to be candid, Tony, there's still a bit of a stigma around the country when you talk to athletic directors, because there's this perception that, you know, that Grand Canyon didn't do it the same way as everybody else. And
yeah, exactly.
You hear people talking about the for-profit thing, which was put to bed a long time ago. But everyone I know whose children have gone there have had a great experience, and athletically, I mean, they're just competitive in just about every sport they have. So they're going to enjoy this year in the Mountain West, and who knows what things are going to look like 5 years from now. I think the deck will be shuffled again to some extent, and that's why it's so critical for Fresno State to put its best foot forward over these next few years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And to put a capper on baseball, we'll be talking about it, week after week, but we are closing in again on February 13th. So if you haven't gotten season tickets, please do so and get ready to enjoy what I think is going to be a terrific and final year in the Mountain West. Paul, as far as where this conference is going forward, and I brought this up before, and nobody is blind to it that has been paying attention over and over again, that you have different schools of thought about the PAC, and I refer to it as the PAC because, again, the very few conferences actually have the proper amount of schools that have a numeric designation. The Big 12 does not have 12 teams. The PAC, the Big 10 does not have 10 teams. So I know that it's a little bit of poetic license, but I just refer to it as the PAC. I grew up with the PAC 8, so I could call it the PAC 8 right now, I guess, but I just call it the PAC simply because I think, Paul, that those that have lined up behind me, well, it's really just the two holdovers, Washington State and Oregon State, and the rest of it is just the Mountain West. So it's a grandiose name that doesn't relate to the old PAC the way it was. I understand that, but I also know, as we've talked over and over again, what this conference does going forward from, say, 8 to 12 at some point, that's going to determine it. I've said this before. This was the proper move. You did not want to be left behind, but it doesn't mean it's an end in and of itself. This conference has got to make intelligent and very measured decisions so that it is something more than part of a G6. Your level of confidence that beyond the 8 we're seeing now, I'm talking football-wise, that they are going to be able to put together ultimately a 10 and 12-team conference that's going to leave the rest of the group of 5 behind at the very least?
Well, time will tell, Tony. I mean, I think a lot of that depends on factors outside of these schools' control. You know, it's what's the experience like moving forward for the Cals and Stanfords of the world in the ACC, and how disenchanted with the travel and those arrangements do those schools become? That affects how big of a pool there is to come back. You know, are there some other schools that would make sense to add? You have to, and they've been very careful about that, about who to add and when. And then it comes down to what happens between the lines, So I think this year's important to generate momentum going into that. I think, if you look at the teams that are going to be in that league basketball-wise, several of them are going to be in the Big Dance this year. So how do they perform, right? I mean, you think about that, adding Gonzaga in basketball, Oregon State, Washington State, getting rid of, for lack of a better way of saying it, the teams that have kind of dragged the Mountain West down from an RPI or net ranking perspective, like San Jose State and Air Force, you won't have that anymore.
So that's the benefit, is you're going to have a very high standard across the board. The challenge is, you know, Fresno State has some work to do to measure up to that standard and to try to get to where they're in the top half of the league. And the Bulldogs, I think, have a chance to move closer to the top half of the league this year in the Mountain West. You know, they're 3-6. We've got a very winnable game on the road Saturday at Air Force. But we both know sometimes a more talented team can end up losing at Air Force between the altitude and the uniqueness of the system the Falcons employ. So that's another pivotal opportunity for Vance Wahlberg and company. You know, you brought up the baseball league that the Pac-12 is going to have. And, you know, we'll see how many conference games they end up with. If they, one of the proposals has been just 18 conference games, which would really put an onus on schools for the non-conference schedule. Oregon State's been playing that kind of schedule as an independent. But for Fresno State, that would be very, very difficult to find games if you're only playing 18 conference games. But that league, as you said, will have Dallas Baptist, which has been in the regionals, you know, for more than a decade straight. You know, Washington State has a tradition of success. Gonzaga's had some good teams. So I think it's going to be a better baseball conference across the board. And, you know, I did want to mention one more thing about the double play dinner. You know, I've hinted to you on some of these interviews that there was some good news coming for the program in terms of the staff. And Coach Overland did introduce, you know, the legendary Tom Goodwin as a new member of the staff this year. And I can't tell you how big a deal that is. You know, when you have a guy who's an Olympic gold medalist, a 14-year big leaguer, a World Series champion coach in the big leagues, who's coached in multiple World Series, who has, you know, a Rolodex longer than yours and mine, and more than that, a reputation in the game of excellence, to have these young players benefit from his experience and his mind on top of the coaching acumen that's already there and a staff that has really good cohesion and chemistry. And I mean, I'm preaching to the choir because longtime Bulldog fans know how special Tom Goodwin is. To have him back in his hometown, helping the young men at his alma mater. And I really think, Tony, that big picture-wise, that's a reflection of something the Bulldogs are going to have to do more and more. When you have someone in your alumni base who has not just excellent skill and character and knowledge, but also excellent character and an excellent reputation, finding a way to have those guys not just friends, but actually connected in a palpable way to your program, that can be something that helps make up the difference in the resource gap. So you look at all the sports at Fresno State, at least all the ones that I do, and there are those kind of people that fit that description. And if you can find a way at some point to have them truly on board in a more official capacity, I think that can be one of those things that helps turn the tide, because the deck is stacked against schools like Fresno State in the landscape of college athletics, you know, and it's getting further that way. It's not like they're making up a gap, and they're not alone. All the schools in that same profile, you know, they're getting left further behind in the resource gap. So one of the resources they have that these other schools might not have is that kind of alumni caliber. And when you can tap into it, when you have a guy with a heart like Tom's to come back and give back to the younger generation, to me, that's a much bigger deal than people probably think it is, especially if it leads to more of those situations.
I agree 100%. You also know what I'm about to say, because I've said it to you many times since 2002. Tom Goodwin should also be a World Series champion as a player. Okay, that's all I'm going to tell you. And you know, Paul, I will never get over it. Okay, let's just put it that way. You know, I told Dwayne Kuiper one day, he brought that up because Kuiper and I had talked after Game 6, because after Kuiper left the airwaves, he said, well, there's always a Game 7. And I talked to him, he goes, yeah, we're not winning Game 7 after blowing Game 6. And I was talking to Kuiper about it at one point, and I said, I've never gotten over it. I said, then again, I haven't gotten over Chuck Hiller not being able to get a bunt down in the 1962 World Series. And then he brought up something from the 50s with his beloved Milwaukee Braves. So all we were proving, Paul, is how old and vindictive we were at that time, and we're a lot older now. And I'm still irritated about 2002. And privately, I think Tom Goodwin is probably shaking his head, as every Giant at that time should be, don't you think?
Ah, Tony.
What?
You know what they say about you know, unforgiveness. It's like drinking poison and waiting for the other guy to die. Sometimes you got to let
That's
it go.
Right.
So who do you love more, Salomon Torres or Russ Ortiz? You tell me.
Apropos of nothing except you're a giant man. What I heard after all of this time, and it hasn't lessened the blindstone matter, Roger Craig, as everybody knows, for the fumble in 1991. So, you know, I'm pulling for him in the hall, however. But here's the thing. When I found out that when Dusty Baker went to the mound and said, you seem like maybe you're tired, Russ Ortiz said, yeah, okay. No, that's not what you say, Russ. You say, I'm fine. Give me the damn ball again. You don't allow your coach to give you an open-ended question and then meet it with ambivalence. Because if you do that, then it leads to Felix Rodriguez throwing fastball after fastball after fastball. Oh, okay. Just, you know what? You're right. I really have got to get over it, Paul. You're going to have to charge me for therapy because this keeps coming up. So I'm glad Tommy's going to be part of it. I'm glad he did win as a coach. I just wish he would have won as a player. That's all. But, anyway, there was 10, 12, and 14, so everything's fine. All right. My apologies. All right, Paul, let me get back on track here. The Bulldogs did not shoot the ball well. We talked about it at Albuquerque. That's a tough place to play. It took them a long time to just break through to win at Albuquerque, period, and in the long history the Bulldogs have had in the same conference as the Lobos. We knew in order for Fresno State to beat Grand Canyon, the Bulldogs were going to have to shoot it well. They shot it horribly, but they stayed in the game because Grand Canyon was ice cold as well. When you look at how the game ended, they had a chance to win. Is this part of the you got to crawl before you walk process? And that's why we're seeing them start to come close but not being able to finish the deal all the time. Or do they still have deficiencies that mean they're just not going to be hyper-competitive when we get to the conference tournament? Can you make a judgment at all about this?
Well, I think they're making great progress, Tony. I think, you know, objectively, and I know it's easy for, you know, people to put on some bulldog colored glasses, but, you know, Grand Canyon, there's a school that doesn't have football. So basketball is the number one investment. They've got maybe the best home court advantage in the country. And Mike Krzyzewski has said that. That's not just me saying that. And, you know, so they've invested well in basketball and they have a roster that athletically is superior to almost every team in the league. I think you could say, you know, UNLV and San Diego State are the other two that compare in terms of length, you know, leaping ability. You've got some experience on that team as well. And the Lopes are without one of their starters in that game. I really think Fresno State overachieved to keep that game as close as it was and to have a chance. And part of the way they did it was, you know, good ball movement, good defense, being resilient, and a freshman who's growing in confidence. I mean, Deshaun Gorey is playing like one of the better players in the league. He's been consistent, right? I mean, he's got 5 double-doubles in his last 6 games, and credit the coaching staff for adapting. Because what they've done with Deshaun is they said, you know what? You've earned enough trust that you can go outside the system a little bit and take shots that the system is not designed to create because you're going to make them. Now, he didn't make as many in the last game, but he still had another double, still had another 20-point game. In Albuquerque, you know, it was unreal. He went off for 31. You can count on one hand the number of Bulldog freshmen over the years that have done that. That's a real significant accomplishment. So he's getting better and better. You know, Collins being in and out with injuries hasn't helped, but I thought he played a pretty good game Saturday too, and his defense helped keep Fresno State in the game with what he did on Mekhi Williams. You know, it's a tough game for Wilson Jack, but he's been real consistent, you know, defensively and getting rebounds for the Bulldogs, and he's still developing. You know, not having Stickman certainly didn't help because athletically he was one of the only guys that you would put, you know, in the same caliber from just like a movement, leaping ability, athleticism standpoint as that roster. And, you know, sometimes we get caught up in records and we look at, you know, matchups or some people look at betting lines. But if you look at the bodies and the length and the athleticism, and that's what we do in a pickup game, and those things matter. And, you know, that was a really talented team that they played the other day. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, if you walked into the gym and you saw the two teams and you saw them warm up, you would make Grand Canyon a decided favorite. So that's not a knock on Fresno State. That's just the reality. So how do you overcome that is you play a really good team game. You take care of the basketball. You don't turn it over. You do a good job in rebounding. You play good defense. And then, you know, you capitalize on the offensive end. There are a few things happened early in that game that I think helped the Bulldogs shoot such a poor percentage. And that was Grand Canyon's one of the tallest teams in the country, has phenomenal rim protection from not just one guy, but a couple. And then what really changed the game, and this is a theme, right? We've seen this a couple times, the Nevada game. Fresno State could have won. Late in the game, Nevada made an adjustment. They said, we think Tyler Rollison is good enough that none of these Bulldogs are going to stay in front of him. We're going to have him attack the basket. He's either going to get a bucket, free throws, or an open shooter. Grand Canyon made a similar adjustment. If you saw most of the game, Bryce Drew has his guys taking corner threes. They're hot and cold, mostly cold. When they figured out that Jaden Henley was the toughest guy in the gym to guard, and if that he wanted to attack the basket, it was going to be hard for anybody to stop him, that's what turned the tide. That's why Grand Canyon won the game. So ultimately, a mismatch is what decided the game. And I think there are going to be situations that swing the other way for Fresno State, where they have a player who has that big of a matchup advantage, and when you roll with that, it can change things. But outside of that, they've just got to keep playing great team basketball, continue to grow together. And the good sign is this is a team that's on the same page. These players love each other. They're playing for each other. They're having fun. They're getting better as individuals and as a team. And, you know, they're going to a game Saturday at Air Force where, you know, if they play to their potential, they should win. And then let's see what kind of momentum that generates. I think, you know, they've got an excellent chance to finish, you know, in that 6-7 range in the league, which gives you an opportunity maybe to make some noise in the tournament, especially if you continue to get better. But they're not regressing, they're improving. And I think the two games this week showed that, especially when it comes to Deshaun Gorey. So, you know, let's see where they go from here. Hopefully they can be healthy. We'll see when they get Stickman back from this concussion issue and, you know, see if they can find more consistent shooting. DJ Douglas shot the ball well the other day. Keeping him healthy is a game changer. And, you know, hopefully he gets healthier and better as the season goes on as well. So I think, you know, if you're looking at evaluating the program, is it moving forward? Is it moving backwards? I see progress. I see growth. I see development. And I see a lot of positive energy from the players. So to me, that's encouraging.
Well, there's no question from last year to this, they have become competitive now. Now the question is, can they take that final step? And Paul, what you're bringing up, and it happens in a lot of games, right, where you're close enough, but in crunch time or clutch time, whatever you want to call the last 5 minutes, you don't quite have what other teams have, which is, you said, somebody who can break down a defense, but maybe more importantly, a team that understands where the ball belongs. And I bring this up because I think it's still difficult for Fresno State in this regard. Jake is a very good player. He's obviously an outstanding free throw shooter. That helps a great deal late. He is a guy who can make clutch jumpers, but he is not a guy who's going to break people down one-on-one and blow their doors off. He doesn't have that kind of athleticism. You've got a guy like Collins who's in this very difficult position, and I've talked to Furtick about this over and over again, and you know this, Paul, from playing the game and also being an announcer and someone who's a fan of the game. You have to know, if you're the guy who handles the ball most of the time, that the rest of your teammates, if you are going to be the go-to guy, you're already ball dominant, you have to know that the rest of your teammates and your coaching staff convinced that you are the guy, and in your own mind, you have to know that you're not going to be perceived as the ball hog who's trying to take every single big shot if you happen to be the best guy down the stretch. And I think that the team and Collins are still trying to figure this out, Paul. He is a very difficult matchup, and he can beat people off the dribble, and he's getting better with not over-penetrating so that he's giving himself that mid-range so he has room to shoot it past the guards up top, whether it's man-to-man or zone, but pulling up before the bigs can get to him. But, Paul, he also has to know that if he does that and he's the go-to guy, he's going to have four other guys watching him the entire time. How do you find a way to say all that balance? And is it something that Collins has to just do if he is the best option? Even though he's the guy who's supposed to distribute, maybe he's the guy in the last 2 minutes, just maybe?
Well, it's definitely part of the equation, right? And I think, you know, a simplification of what you said is in the last 2 minutes, if the ball's in his hand, he has to be a threat to score. If the other team knows he's only penetrating for the sake of kicking it out, that's when you see the turnovers. That's when you see the steals. So, yeah, he has to have the freedom to score. Part of that's the freedom to take that mid-range jumper. And there are times where he's been very effective with that, right? So, yeah, what you need is consistency, and you want him to be healthy. Now, I would think Saturday is going to be a favorable matchup for him. So how does he play at the Academy? I think it's also a game where you could see Jake Heidbreder go off, not just because of the matchup, but because of, you know, the context. He played at that school for 2 years, has a lot of good memories there, and they remember him fondly at the Academy as well. So he'll be highly motivated and should have some opportunities to get shots off. And like I said before, you know, this team is growing. Douglas coming along is a big factor. I still think getting some more consistency from Jack Manny could really help. He's very skilled offensively. I know he's bummed the other day that, you know, they were looking for him early and he had some open looks from three and they didn't go down, but they weren't going down for anybody at that point. You know, it's one of these days you're going to have a game where Heidbreder's hitting, Douglas is hitting, Cam Foss is hitting, and Manny is hitting. And that's going to be the game where the Bulldogs win a game people don't think they should. I really think that one is still coming for this team because they're staying focused. They're staying determined. They're staying together. And, you know, it's been a real fun group to get to be around, to get to know. And, you know, that says something about this coaching staff and how they're handling all the challenges and how they're making sure these guys stay connected. And, you know, similar, we talked about Tom Goodwin and what that means. For baseball, Tyler Johnson is that guy in the basketball program. And, you know, he's in the mix with everything. And Coach Wahlberg really trusts him. The players really trust him. That's another staff that I think has some pretty good chemistry, is all pulling on the same end of the rope, as Coach Batesel used to say. And once again, they're making progress. And, you know, let's give the fans some credit. Two games in a row, 6,500 in the Save Mart Center, that made a difference. That helped them stay close with a really good Grand Canyon team. So, you know, when they're back home, hopefully we see the red wave back out like they have been.
All I know is this, Paul. Your points are well taken. Whether it's Collins or Gorey or Heidbreder, whoever it is, it would be nice to have somebody that the other team is deathly afraid of that individual taking the big shot so that you start to see the help come running. Then that's when you get the old hockey assist, right? The pass that leads to the pass that leads to the bucket. And it might be a backdoor cut. It might be somebody who's wide open on the weak side because the defense felt they couldn't play straight up. And right now with Fresno State, yes, there are times they shoot it well, but they don't shoot it consistently well enough, nor do they have the one guy that everybody is scared to death of, though Gorey's getting there. I'm with you about that. You brought it up last week, that the defense changes its very structure just to stop that individual. When you get to that point, and you're right, the Bulldogs have had it happen to them where they've been broken down by somebody, and if they don't send two, they're not going to be able to stop him. And if they send two, somebody's going to be wide open, and they're not the biggest team to begin with, and they're getting absolutely killed on the boards because of it. It's a real tough way to beat people down the stretch. I'm hoping they can come up with that elixir, that magical elixir between now and March, because the point you're bringing up, I think, is very fair. If this team shoots to its capability on a given night, they can beat anybody. They would be the kind of team nobody would want to play at the conference tournament if they can show that that is a possibility, or maybe more particularly a probability at some point. We're just waiting for it, right? See, maybe it'll show here.
Yeah, and there will be some opportunities, right? You know, maybe one of these road games that they're not supposed to win. They come out shooting well, and we've seen that. When they get off to a good start, when Heidbreder hits early, when they get a second shooter, whether it's Douglas or Foss or Jack, knocking down perimeter shots early, it changes everything. It changes spacing, you know, affects the defense, and, you know, there's a boost in confidence, too, that comes from that. So, but I really think the development of Gorey these last 3 weeks is the story of the season. And, you know, hats off to the coaching staff for seeing his potential. And then, you know, giving them the freedom to create and the freedom to operate outside the normal structure of that offense, that's helped keep them in games. And it's certainly raising his profile you won't find too many freshmen around the country that have 30-point games or that have five double-doubles in six games. And especially this early. I mean, he's played, what, 20 games as a college player. So let's see what he can do the last dozen or so and how much better he can get from where he is now.
Well, I know this, that from last year, I think some of the fans have PTSD about missing shots, missed shots by Fresno State, because last year it was, in all candor, a clank fest all the time. And I know that this year, when you see an individual shoot it well, but as a team they don't seem to always coalesce, there are a lot of people saying, oh no, is this going to happen again, where it's one thing when you're being defended well, it's another when you're missing wide open shots. Better shooting team. They've had some cold stretches. It hurts them a great deal because, like I said, they're not going to make a defense change its structure unless they start consistently making shots. Maybe they will, and what you're referencing is very true. They have got two major tests, and I do mean major tests, left on the road. That is going to Logan to play Utah State and going to Phoenix to play Grand Canyon before they get to the conference tourney. So we'll see. They have the week off, and as Paul mentioned, they're at Air Force at Clune Arena, which is just a very cold gym, ladies and gentlemen, at noon our time on Saturday. Paul, I want to ask you real quickly here about Steven's email. We have talked about our Mount Rushmore, current Mount Rushmore, Derek Carr. We're waiting to see. I don't think Derek's going to come back and play. Maybe he will. We'll see. But we have Paul George on that list, Devontae Adams and Aaron Judge, and we're waiting for the first title. Aaron has come close. It looked like Devontae had a great shot of making it to the Super Bowl, but the Rams weren't able to get it done yesterday. Paul George, incredibly, though there's the injury issues are still there, if he's healthy, if Embiid is healthy, the Sixers are capable. Could we see Paul George maybe become the guy this spring, or is that asking too much, even if they get out of the East, given what they'd have to face in the West?
Well, time will tell, right? We'll see how those teams look once we get there. I mean, you know as well as I do, there are things that change a team's prospects, and injuries are chief among them. But, you know, they certainly show some potential to make that kind of run. I still think it's going to happen for Judge at some point. What's crazy is how he just keeps getting better, right? I mean, you don't see too many players his age that are still improving, but that's a testament to who he is, how he's wired, his consistency on and off the field. And, you know, he just picked up his MVP this week. They had that baseball awards dinner in New York City. He was talking to his agent, Paige Odell, about it. Paige does such a tremendous job. And really understands Aaron's heart and what he's about. And, you know, that All Rise Foundation just makes a huge difference in all kinds of places. And so proud of that young man and how he represents the Valley, since he's, you know, homegrown talent, and certainly how he represents his alma mater. And I think the World Series title is coming for him at some point. It may require upending that Dodger dynasty and, you know, the other generational player that's leading that charge. But I believe it'll happen for him before he hangs up the pinstripes.
Well, the Giants signed Harrison Bader today, so look out. That means the World Series guaranteed. there's optimism / delusional behavior all wrapped into one. Other part of Stephen's question, as I let you go, Paul, he said the local Mount Rushmore for the Super Bowl of guys who either played at Fresno State or are local products, the top four, who are they? I will share with you the two I brought up as far as local products, both, of course, USC grads, but also Edison grads, that played key roles in Super Bowl titles. Charlie Young for the first 49ers Super Bowl, Tim McDonald for the last 49ers Super Bowl they won. Those two, and then I would have to put Trent Dilfer, who naturally was front and center for the Ravens, and Ryan Wendell, who was on that line of a game I brought up earlier, the one that Seattle and the Patriots played in Arizona that resulted in INT late instead of running the football. Anybody else, Paul, you could put in there, either local or Fresno State, and Fresno State, take your choice, that was a key cog in a Super Bowl victory? I can't think of another that would usurp those four. Do you have somebody?
Well, You can go all the way back to Super Bowl III and Bill Baird.
Well, yes, Lindsay High going School. Back to the Jets. Yep, that's true.
Bill was a prolific defensive back for the Jets. How about, Willie Wood, who went in the Fresno County Athletic Hall of Fame this year and had played quarterback at Kalinga College back in the day? He would certainly be part of that mix. There's a long list of guys who've been on championship teams, but as far as making big plays in the game, those two are there. I'm trying to think who else.
Yeah, it's difficult because we have guys that were key cogs that made it to the Super Bowl. Daryl LaMonica, for instance, for the Raiders in 67, but did not win the Super Bowl. So it's very, very tricky. And you always think
How about
of Mark
Mosbar?
Fleming, who goes, well, that's true too. You could go there. And some people, I have one guy who brought up when we were talking about one time, and this is, and I, Logan, I think, shakes his head about this. 99% of the football fandom they're convinced that Logan Mankins won the Super Bowl. As luck would have it, he was there multiple times, but always when they didn't win it, Paul. So, but Ryan was there. So,
Michael Pittman.
If you know Logan. Yeah, well, how about Michael Pittman Jr. being a terrific player, by the way, in the NFL, and people sort of ignore that fact a little bit. So, there are guys. I picked the four that I thought front and center were most important, although your Bill Baird comment, I think, is very fair and relevant. And also, if you want to look at a Super Bowl that changed just about everything, even though it wasn't the greatest game to watch – from Miami, it was a game that, as we've talked, may have saved the AFL, because at that point, with the Packers having beaten both the Chiefs and the Raiders handily, Lombardi was banging the drum before the merger as of the two leagues melded together. They already had the common draft, but he said this Super Bowl cannot be played the way it is right now, that the AFL is not competitive. And had it not been for the Jets, who, by the way, were 17.5-point underdogs to the Colts, had it not been for the Jets winning, I don't know that it would have actually taken place the way it did. And of course, the next year, the Chiefs beat the Vikings. So by the time they broke into AFC and NFC, they were 2-2. But, Paul, you can trust me, in 1969, the attitude was that league didn't belong with the other,
Yeah, and I do have one more to throw at you, and you may think it's a little bit of a stretch, but I'll make the case, and that would be our buddy Matt Giordano, because, Devin Hester takes the kickback, and Tony Dungy tells the story the whole week when he came to our prep reference here a couple years ago. Tony told this story, and that's coming up again, by the way, February 17th in downtown Fresno, if you don't have your tickets yet, FresnoClovisPrayerBreakfast.org. But Tony Dungy, when he was here, told the story the whole week. They had decided they weren't going to kick it to Devin Hester. Why give him a chance to beat you? The night before the game, they have some team chapel, and it's about David and Goliath and not fearing your enemies. And he got so pumped up, he said, no, we're not going to be afraid of him. We're going to kick it to him. So they do. He takes it back. But Matt Giordano's hustle on that play, even though the touchdown counted, what Matt did coming from the other side of the field and catching Hester in the end zone, not only did it extend his NFL career because that play showed his speed and his determination, I think it fired up his teammates in that game. They go on to beat Cam Worrell and the Bears and get the ring. And I think if you talk to Tony Dungy, that was one of the more memorable moments of that Super Bowl for Indianapolis.
Well, great point. You know what? This will be a to be continued because we're out of time. Appreciate it, my friend. Have a great week and a safe trip to the Academy. It's always meaningful there. But I'll leave you with this since you brought it up. Matt has been on the air with us many times, haven't talked to him lately. But after that Super Bowl, the running joke we had for him was the president happened to be the number that Matt's jersey was. So we said, you were so great, they gave the president your jersey, Matt. And he said, okay, well, I'll go with that. Okay. So anyway, you're absolutely right. He played a key role, and I'm glad you brought it up so that Cam can be irritated at you for bringing it up one more time. Speaking about somebody who doesn't handle that defeat well, Paul, you work with him all the time. So there you go. And can't say as I blame him, right? That was a terrific Bears team, and fell just short. So anyway, Anything else, Paisan, as I let you go?
No, I just think you probably need to have Tom Flores on that Mount Rushmore because he was a Super Bowl winning coach and a trailblazer and a guy who, you know, was in Super Bowls as a player, won it as a head coach, and was just so great to our region over the years. You know, he finally got his bust in Canton, but I think you'd have to make a case for him there too.
Yeah, you have to put a special interest to Tom, not about being a player, but rather a coach. And look, Tom was a guest, as you know, a great friend and a guest week after week after week. Not that long ago, right around 2015 or so, I think was the last time we talked to him. I think he's still down in Palm Springs doing well. Appreciate everything he did for us as well. Paul, have a great one, my friend. Take care. I'll be in touch.
We'll see you, Tony.
All right, guys. Paul Leffler, I know. All right, we're very late. Wanted to get that out there, and it is worthy of discussion. You have any thought about it, guys? Key cogs for Super Bowls that have local ties, either from Fresno State or Valley natives. As long as they were a key cog, certainly we'll talk about it. Take a break, tell you about the schedule, hand it off to Phil, and then the Lakers as we continue on this Monday, the Bulldog Hour on 1430 ESPN. Let's go. Still hand it off to Phil's outstanding show behind the bench. Normally 3 hours, 3 to 6. Today he'll be on till 4:45, and then it's time for the Lakers. Their long road trip underway because the Grammys have their building right now. It was kind of tough for the Lakers to play. I guess they could ask Steve Ballmer if they could use the Intuit Dome, that crazy George Orwell-like facility where you will cheer and you will like it. It's rather unnerving. Great, great building. Just tells you how manic the owner is in Steve Ballmer. But he has, I think, $84 billion, so I guess he can be as manic as he wants. Anyway, the Lakers coming up from Chicago. Like I said, they're there already. I don't know if anybody else can get into Chicago at the moment. 4:45 to pre, 5 o'clock will be the start of the game. Let me tell you about schedule for both 790 and 1430 right now, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering. Planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all there under one roof. 449-4500, or Precision ENG, or Precision ENG, if you prefer, .net. And we always commend Ed for the great fundraising he does for his alma mater, Fresno State, through the great work he does for the Lyles College of Engineering, with the goal being, as always, to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked beautifully over the years, and a lot of those grads from the Lyles College of Engineering go to work for Ed at Precision Civil Engineering. As far as the schedule goes, again, the Lakers 4:45 tonight. Tomorrow you have got the Sharks, and Celebrini continues to play great hockey right now, a teenager no less. So maybe the Sharks are going to become competitive again. I certainly hope so. Sharks tomorrow, and also Phil and Paul Metters have high school basketball for you. Phil will tell you more about that. And then later in the week, both the Sharks and Lakers continue on. And then for us, we wait for the Super Bowl a week from Sunday, all the Pro Bowl festivities in this bye week. And then, of course, in Santa Clara, Levi Stadium, it'll be a rematch of the game from 2014. And we'll see exactly how it plays out. I said before the Rams and the Seahawks played, whoever won that game, they would win the Super Bowl, and I still think that is the case. No knock against the Patriots, but I just think either representative is going to be too strong, and I think that's how it's going to turn out, but we'll see. Anyway, the other reminders about shows, I mentioned Phil normally 3 to 6 with his great show Behind the Bench, including Thursdays at Fashion Furniture with our good friend Rod Avedikian. Best furniture on the planet, nothing like it in all of California. Some good eats as well when Phil is around, and the furniture itself is worth you stopping by any day of the week. But on Thursdays, you can see Phil there, or you can give him a call on the Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430, El Paso, across from River Park. Paul Metters has two fine shows, Sunbird Sports Show 6 to 7 on 790 on Wednesdays, and then on 1430 Saturday mornings, 10 a.m. to noon, from First Ring Sports, Central Valley Sports Report. We are with you at 2 o'clock each and every weekday. You can reach me, tdad1 at att.net, tdad, the number 1 at att.net. Everything for the station, 1430 ESPN, fresno.com. You find the live links and podcasts there. Again, mark down that Lee's Air Hotline,
559-320-1430. That's how you can give Phil a call each and every day with his show. And the final reminder comes courtesy of the local operators at KFC in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. Again, they have the great $5 bowls right now. Speaking of a great bowl before the big bowl coming up, the classic or spicy, either is there at the local KFCs. We're talking about creamy mashed potatoes, sweet corn, melty cheese, crispy nuggets, all there stacked in one bowl. You can go for the classic, or you can bring the heat with the bold spicy offering. And also, the opportunity is there for the $5 Maddie's Cheesy Nuggy Gravy Bowl. Crisp nuggets, rich gravy, plenty of cheese, no shortcuts. Always at the local KFCs, Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to Paul. Thanks to Jorge. Phil is coming up, then the Lakers. See you with Jackson tomorrow on KFIG Fresno.